They were all just about to get in the car when a sudden wind swept across the vicarage lawn, and the trees blew, almost as if a hurricane had hit them, except that they all blew in different directions.
"Jesus!" exclaimed Dan, gripping the side of the car. "What was that?"
"Look!"
Lucy was pointing up in the sky.
"A falling star!"
"Make a wish," shouted Nettie.
"Holy moly," growled Nigel,
who was the sort of person who'd always preferred Captain Marvel to Superman.
"Will you look at that?"
Above them, a most extraordinary thing was happening. A ring of cloud had suddenly formed immediately overhead, and then spread out, like a nuclear explosion, until the entire sky was covered by a broiling layer of evil-looking cumulus. Nigel went weak at the knees. Lucy shuddered. Dan felt his stomach jump, and Nettie simply gaped. But there was more to come. The four Earth folk heard a ghostly roar, as if of seas beating on a distant shore that lies beyond the horizon of thought. And then, hugely, magnificently, and without warning, a vast metallic prong descended from the cloud and sliced their elegant form of Victorian rectory, with planning permission for commercial development, in two. Nigel gaped. Lucy gaped. Dan gaped.
"Terrific," murmured Nettie.
There was no other noise save the wind rushing crazily around in the trees, as if it were looking for a place to hide, and the occasional thud of falling masonry, as bits of the rectory that had not already been dislodged by the impact crashed to the ground. The thing itself was shiny and vertical, and it stretched up into the clouds as if it always had. It was so huge, so present, that it seemed to have a perfect right to be there. As they watched, a small pinpoint of light descended down the side of the thing and disappeared into the ruined house. Then it went up again. The swirling clouds, meanwhile, had begun to diminish, and by the time the pinpoint of light started to descend for the second time, the clouds had cleared to reveal the full, awesome vastness of the thing. The wide blade or prong that had buried itself in the house stretched up and up almost a mile into the sky, and there it seemed to widen out into an immense metallic body, rather like a gigantic submarine.
"It's a spaceship," murmured Nettie.
She began to walk towards it as if mesmerized, her camera dangling forgotten from her wrist. Suddenly the pinpoint of light shot up again.
"Don't, Nettie, come back," Dan yelled.
But Lucy was already racing after Nettie, so Dan raced after Lucy. Nigel, in the meantime, tried his best to help by hiding under the steering wheel.
"Don't go near it," said Dan.
"Nettie!"
Lucy was pulling her arm, trying to head her back to the car.
We don't know what it is."
"It's wonderful," murmured Nettie. Something in Nettie's tone made all three of them look up at the great thing and stop whatever it was they were doing. Confronted by something so immense, so beyond their experience or imagination, anything they did suddenly seemed irrelevant, pointless. The pinpoint of light had disappeared into the house for the second time, and there was a glow coming from the hallway. As the three of them brought their eyes back down to earth, they froze. A shadow had appeared on the window of the front door.
"There's something coming."
Dan could feel his knees beginning to quiver. Lucy pulled at Nettie's arm, but Nettie edged forward, as if eager to greet whatever it was that was even now opening the front door of the destroyed vicarage.
"Ah!"
screamed Lucy as the thing emerged into the starlight.
"Good evening to your unknown life forms," said the thing. "The proprietors of Starlight Travel, Inc., would like to apologize for any inconvenience you may have suffered due to the inadvertent emergency parking of their vehicle."
Lucy was by now screaming uncontrollably. Nigel was covering his ears and trying to get even further under the steering wheel of the car.
"It's all right, Lucy."
Dan was trying to calm her down. Lucy was not about to be calmed down by anybody. She was confronted by an alien from outer space, and she was jolly well going to have a good scream.
"Shh," said Nettie. "It's talking to us."
"Quite," said the thing from outer space. "By way of an apology, may we have the pleasure of offering you a free cruise on board our starship?"
Perhaps another day," said Dan.
Continued Lucy.
"Yes," cried Nettie. "I'd love to."
Come with me, madam, said the thing from outer space, and it turned smartly back into the ruined house.
Well, come on, said Nettie. Oh, what a hoot!
And before either Lucy or Dan could stop her, she had followed it through the front door. Dan hesitated, and then realized he had no choice. Before Lucy could start screaming again, he was racing after Nettie, and Lucy found herself racing after Dan. The thing was now standing by an illuminated porch, by the light of which they could now see that the thing appeared to be nothing more frightening than a smartly dressed robot wearing headphones, who bowed politely to them and apologized for having to invite them into the service elevator.
Please do not be alarmed, it said in a soothing voice. I can assure you that the Starship Titanic is the most luxurious and technologically advanced intergalactic starship ever built.
It bowed again and ushered them in, and somehow or other, neither Dan nor Lucy nor Nettie could later quite explain why, they all three found themselves entering the elevator. Before they knew what was happening, the steps had retracted up behind them, and the robot had flicked a switch.
I apologize once again for having to bring you in by the service elevator, remarked the robot. Entrance to the starship is normally at embarkation level.
Hey, exclaimed Dan, how come you speak English?
Dan felt better now he'd found something concrete to question.
I beg your pardon, but I am not speaking, what did you say, English? All robotic functions in public areas on the ship are equipped with infraviolet translation sensors, which automatically scan the brain impulses of passengers for language patterns. These patterns are then rearranged inside your heads so that you can understand and speak intelligibly while on the ship. You are actually speaking and understanding Blerontinian. Pretty convenient for writers of science fiction, eh?
Dan wasn't sure what to make of this last remark. Was the robot implying that he was nothing more than a figment of some writer's mind, and that this whole thing was not really happening? However, before he could think any further along these lines, his mind was overwhelmed by the fantastic situation in which they now found themselves. They were speeding vertically up the vast keel towards the main body of the starship, a mile above the surface of the Earth. Nigel stabbed out a number on his mobile and called half-heartedly out of the car window,
Dan, Lucy, Nettie.
But his voice barely reached the crumbled brickwork of the ruined house. The next moment he heard a ghostly roar, like seas beating on a far-off shore.
Hello, said his mobile, Oxford Police Station, can I help you?
Nigel didn't reply. He was too busy watching the vast, unbelievable thing as it rose up into the air again, and disappeared towards the Milky Way.
Hello? Hello? This is Oxford Police Station, insisted his mobile phone. Who's this?
Nigel looked at the smashed Victorian vicarage and the driveway where his friends had stood a few moments ago, and replaced his mobile on its cradle. It didn't happen, he murmured to himself. It didn't happen. You might have thought there was a tinge of relief in the way his shoulders relaxed. But of course you would have dismissed such an idea as total fantasy. In any case, at that same moment, Nigel suddenly became very unrelaxed again. In fact, he very nearly jumped out of his Armani trousers. He certainly hit his head on the roof of the car. Ouch! He yelled. An old man with a flowing white beard was sitting quietly in the passenger seat. There were tears in his eyes, and one of his eyebrows was just about to fall off. The moment the ship took off, Dan felt a sinking feeling in his stomach. This was, of course, simply the result of the incredible G-force that was beginning to be exerted upon his body. But Dan, who had no idea that the ship had taken off, merely thought he was getting nervous. The sinking feeling in the stomach was quickly followed by a draining of blood from the brain, leading to momentary lightheadedness, followed by total blackout. If he hadn't just passed out, Dan would have noticed that the takeoff had affected Lucy and Nettie in an identical way, even though none of them knew what was happening.
Nothing to be alarmed about, sir, madam and thing.
The polite robot seemed to be addressing this last at the now comatose Nettie.
A perfectly routine takeoff. You lifeforms have a good snooze, while us machines get on with running the ship.
The doorbot itself then blacked out and lay in a tidy heap, while the ship accelerated at speeds far beyond its original specifications towards an unknown quarter of the intergalactic space-time continuum.
The robots on board must have recovered consciousness before the humans. Nettie found herself undressed and tucked up in bed in a tiny cabin about the size of her flat back in Haringey. Apart from the size, everything about the place was unfamiliar. The sheets on the bed were made of some material that felt like silk, but much thicker and heavier. The mug holding the toothbrush bore a picture of an elderly Egyptian opera singer, or at least that's who it looked like to Nettie. She'd once received a postcard of an elderly Egyptian opera singer and had kept it in a drawer. The toothbrush itself was rather weird, since it kept ducking its head and brushing its own handle, rather like a bird preening itself. Opposite the bed was a television, on which a snowstorm seemed to be the only entertainment. Nettie picked up the remote, aimed it at the TV, and started pressing buttons. A cocktail cabinet rose out of the floor. A dustbot scuttled out of the clothes cupboard, picked up an invisible speck of dust, squeaked, "Thank you for appreciating a clean environment," and hurried back out of sight again. The door opened, the lights went on and off, but the TV resolutely refused to show any program other than the snowstorm.
"Ha-ha! Hi! I'm glad to see you found your personal electronic thingy. Please keep it with you at all times, since it's your communication with the starship Titanic. Welcome aboard!"
Nettie found herself apparently being addressed by the standard lamp that stood in the corner of the cabin. She instinctively pulled the sheets up to cover her breasts.
"Wowee! I don't blame you keeping those babies to yourself!" exclaimed the standard lamp.
"Will you turn around while I get dressed?" said Nettie. The lamp obediently turned around. It was the same on the other side. "Will you please go away?" she said.
"Hey, that'll be groovy! I've had it up to here with standing around in this cabin anyway!"
The standard lamp walked smartly towards the door.
"Oh, by the way," it said breezily, "I'm your bellbot. Anything you want, just ask me. I'll be standing outside. Wow, it's great to get a change of scenery!"
And closed the door.
"I'm sure that robot's not meant to behave like that," said Nettie to herself.
She threw on her clothes and examined the thing she had mistaken for the TV remote control. On it were a variety of buttons. One of them had an icon of the bellbot on it, so she pressed it, and the door reopened and the bellbot peered in.
"Wow, Zee! You look terrific in that Gap T-shirt!" it exclaimed.
"Will you please refrain from making personal comments?" said Nettie rather crossly.
"Hey! No offence, man!"
The bellbot seemed genuinely hurt.
"What can I do for you?"
"Firstly, I want to meet up with my colleagues. Secondly, I think we probably would like to know how to get off this ship."
"Hot dog!"
The bellbot snapped its fingers.
"You mean there are more hot little numbers like you around?"
"You are behaving most impolitely for an android."
Nettie knew how to address a robot.
"Would you please keep your personal comments to yourself? Otherwise, I will have you reported, and you know what that'll mean."
The bellbot froze to the spot.
"Hey, man, I'm a genuine personality transfer bot. It's my character."
"Well, I don't like it, and you're here to serve me, so just stop it at once."
The robot went all sulky.
"Ah, all right, don't go on about it.
Do you know where my friends are?"
"Adjoining rooms," suggested the bellbot.
Nettie was out of her cabin in a moment. Every door along the narrow corridor that curved round and out of vision had writing on it.
"What's this say?" she asked.
By way of answer, the robot produced a pair of spectacles and offered them to Nettie. Nettie hesitated, then put them on.
"Translator specs," explained the bellbot unhappily.
Nettie could now see that every door had a name. Hyacinth, Jasmine, Delphinium, and so on.
"How tacky," murmured Nettie.
She started knocking on cauliflower. After a dozen or so vain attempts on various flora, she turned on the bellbot, which was walking quietly behind her with its hands folded behind its back.
"Look, do you or do you not know where my friends are?"
"I do not," said the robot.
"Do you or do you not know how I can go about finding them?"
Nettie was phrasing her questions carefully.
"I do," said the bellbot after some thought.
"Then tell me how," said Nettie.
"Guest list," announced the robot.
"And where's that?"
"Desk bot. Embarkation lobby, embarkation floor," replied the bot.
"Can't I just ring from my room?"
"Not from the Supergalactic Traveller class suites, no."
"Then show me the way to the embarkation lobby," said Nettie. "Ah," replied the bellbot, "I'm afraid I can't leave this deck. But if you go along to the lifts, the lift bot will take care of all your vertical transportation requirements, and then a door bot will escort you round the embarkation lobby."
Nettie sighed. she could already tell that travelling supergalactic class was not going to be glamorous. Lucy came to her senses to hear a loud knocking sound. She sat up and looked around an unfamiliar room. It was tiny, cramped, and had a hideous lampstand in one corner. The television wasn't working properly, and the colour scheme was a ghastly pink. There was a constant grinding sound coming from underneath the floor, and besides that, there was this wretched knocking on what she now began to recognise as the door.
Lucy!
Lucy now realised there was a voice accompanying the knocking. Open the door! It was Dan's voice.
How?
You've got a little remote control thingy. Use that, shouted Dan.
After a bit of fumbling, she managed to get the door opened, and there was Dan, standing in a dingy corridor, running his fingers through his hair like he always did.
Oh, thank God you're okay.
He smiled that mile wide of his, and Lucy flung herself at him as if she were drowning.
What happened? She cried.
We're going to find out.
Thank goodness he sounded more confident than he felt.
We're in that spaceship, aren't we?
Lucy wished she didn't sound so unconfident, because now she had Dan there, she felt really everything was going to be all right.
Oh, let's find Nettie and get out of this thing as fast as possible, said Dan. Apparently we can only locate other passengers by going up to the embarkation lobby. You'd think a thing this sophisticated would have room-to-room telephones.
The lift entrance in the supergalactic traveller class offered no view of the central well. But once you stepped into the lift, the sudden sheer vastness of the well took you by surprise. Lucy and Dan found themselves speechless.
"Huh," said the liftbot. "If Sir, Madam, or Thing would care to give some indication of their vertical travelling requirements, I might be able to get on with my job, such as it is."
"The embarkation lobby, please," said Dan.
"You asking me to go up?"
"Am I?" asked Dan.
"The embarkation lobby is on the embarkation level, sir."
The liftbot spoke in the tone of voice most people would only dream of using to address particularly stupid patches of damp.
And then that's where we'd like to go.
Up.
I suppose so.
The liftbot fetched up a groan from deep within and muttered to itself,
"Young people nowadays don't give a tinker's cuss for them as went through the hell of two world wars that left some of us with one arm and a broken marriage."
Lucy kicked Dan as she felt him about to reply.
"Just take us to the embarkation lobby."
This was her best Rodeo Drive, no hostages taken voice, which she used when buying antique rugs. The liftbot stifled a pathetic sniffle, put its hand to the handle sticking out from its chest, and pushed it up with a sigh. The elevator gathered speed, and the humans were once again silenced by the spectacular magnificence of the starship. Lucy put a hand into Dan's. In her dreams, she had imagined places of such scale and splendour, but she'd always known that they belonged strictly to the world of the imagination. And yet here she was, in an interior that matched up to her dreams. The old rectory, which Dan had been so crazy about, looked pretty tawdry compared with this. She glanced sideways at Dan. She couldn't guess what he was thinking. Then again, she never could. As they stepped out of the elevator, into the loggia at the top of the great central well, they caught sight of a blonde figure in high heels disappearing into the far door. By the time they reached the embarkation lobby, they found Nettie apparently deep in conversation with a desk light.
"This is the embarkation lobby, sir and madam."
A doorbot had already wheeled over and was gesticulating in front of them in a rather meaningless fashion.
"As supergalactic travellers, you are entitled to pass through this lobby, but you may not use the seating accommodation or the bathrooms. Supergalactic class facilities are available on your own decks."
"Look, we're not travelling," said Dan. "We just want to know how to get out of this thing."
At that moment, Nettie, who seemed to be getting nowhere with the desk light, turned and spotted them.
"Hey, there you are!" she called,
and then turned back to the desk light.
"Listen, bulb brain, you can fill your own request forms in triplicate and shove them up your lampshade."
The desk light rested its head in its hands and pretended to be looking somewhere else.
"Get off this thing," the doorbot
was repeating to itself as Nettie joined them.
Yeah, replied Dan, "we want to get out, like, you know, the quickest way."
"Oh," Nettie looked rather puzzled, "don't you just want to see round a bit?"
You're not scared?"
"Well, a bit, but it's so exciting, and these things seem to be perfectly harmless."
Nettie gave the doorbot a chuck under the chin. It sniffed and pretended to flick a bit of fluff off its sleeve. A dustbot shot out from the skirting, picked up the imaginary bit of fluff, squeaked, and shot back into the skirting again.
It is amazing, isn't it?
Ventured Lucy uncertainly.
Sensational, agreed Nettie.
Look, we've got to be sensible, said Dan, adopting his I'm-in-charge manner that never fooled anyone.
We ought to find the exit so we know where we are, and then maybe we could explore a bit of if you really want.
I'm afraid you can't, sir.
The doorbot sniffed in that particular way designed to make anyone who hasn't paid a fortune for their ticket to snooty travel agents in Kensington feel like unwashed dandruff.
Can't what? Said Lucy.
I'm afraid you can't leave the ship, replied the doorbot. Now, if you wouldn't mind hurrying through to your own decks...
Hey, wait a minute.
Dan had decided to turn nasty, which in his case was usually as nasty as a packet of Band-Aids.
Oh, what do you mean we can't leave the ship?
Are we prisoners?
Nettie sounded faintly thrilled.
No, madam or thing, of course you are not prisoners. It is simply a physical impossibility for you to leave at this moment in time, because the starship is in flight.
The doorbot coughed and indicated the loggia and the great central well.
I suggest you all go down to the supergalactic traveller class restaurant, where you will encounter plain home cooking with a great doorway.
The news that they were in flight had a remarkable effect on the three human beings. If there had been a window, they would all have undoubtedly dashed to it. As there was not, all the energy that would have gone into that dashing had to be used up somehow. Nettie used it up by doing some aerobic movements designed to release stress. Lucy and Dan used it up by shouting at Nettie. Dan chose plain abuse.
You see what you've done? Oh, my God, we're in space! It's all your fault!
I knew it!
Lucy was going for guilt-provoking self-recrimination.
I knew we shouldn't have followed that dumb peroxide airhead.
Please refrain from shouting on the embarkation level. There may be first or second class passengers about. You may shout as much as you want on the supergalactic traveller class decks.
Again, the doorbot indicated the way down. Nettie was holding up her hands.
Hey, guys, calm down.
Why should we calm down?
Dan had hit histrionic mode.
You've just destroyed our future home. You've forced us onto an alien spacecraft, and now we're not even on Earth anymore. God knows how we'll ever get back.
Please, said Nettie, I didn't destroy your future home.
No, I'm sorry. I know, I just got carried away.
Dan didn't know why he'd said that.
And if we really are in the situation this robot tells us we're in, we'd better keep our heads and decide how to get out of it.
Lucy had decided to set aside her admiration for the fabulous decor of the ship and had reverted to primal scream mode.
Please scream on the supergalactic travel class decks only, urged the doorbot.
Do, shouted Dan. Do, what can we do?
I suggest, said Nettie firmly, we find the captain, there must be one, explain our situation and ask him to take us home.
Fine.
Dan was beside himself with sarcasm.
Fine, the captain. Why didn't I think of that? Oh, yes, brilliant idea. Actually, that is a pretty good idea.
Continued Lucy after a short pause.
Shut up, said Dan.
It was the first time he'd ever spoken to Lucy like that, and she shut up in surprise.
Where can we find the captain?
Nettie turned to the doorbot, who was looking about anxiously to make sure no other passengers were being incommoded by all this supergalactic traveller class screaming.
The captain, madam or thing, is to be found on the captain's bridge, said the doorbot coldly, with killing logic.
And where do we find that?
You don't, said the robot firmly. The captain's bridge is accessible only from the first class accommodation.
Well, surely we can just go through in order to get to the bridge, reasoned Nettie.
I'm afraid not, sniffed the doorbot. All travelling area restrictions are strictly observed on this vessel.
Oh, come off it, exclaimed Dan. This is an emergency.
Over there, said Nettie.
She had just put on her translator specs and could now read the words, First Class Passengers Only Beyond This Point, on a door at the other end of the lobby.
Hey, that's pretty neat, exclaimed Dan when Nettie had explained how she knew which way to go.
Said Lucy. Sorry, I didn't mean to scream. It's just that robot moves so fast.
And it was true. The moment Dan and Nettie and Lucy stepped towards the first-class entrance, the Dawbot had overtaken them and was standing in between them and the doorway.
"I regret, sir, madam, and thing."
"Stop calling me a thing," said Nettie.
"Supergalactic class travellers are not allowed beyond this point. Now, if you'd kindly return to your own decks..."
"Hey, get out of the way, Jeeves," said Dan, and he pushed past the robot.
"Sir will find the door sealed," sniffed the Dawbot, "and if you do not return to your own quarters, I shall be forced to call in the ship's security officers. They have vicious rabbits."
Dan and Lucy were by now pushing and pulling on the first-class door, but it was clearly a pointless exercise.
"Oh, there must be another way of doing this," said Nettie.
Something about her tone of voice made Dan and Lucy calm down and return to rational thinking.
"Okay," said Dan, let me handle this. After all, travel is, or has been, my business. What we have here is the commonest problem known to travellers the world over. How do we get a free upgrade?"
"Ha!" Dan recognised the response immediately. "Corporate dumb insolence. If you don't tell us how to get a free upgrade immediately, I shall report you to the Travel Association." It was a bluff, but it seemed to succeed.
"I cannot help you there, sir."
The contempt in the robot's voice was now so palpable that it made your skin feel rough.
"You will have to inquire with the desk bot,"
and he indicated the desk lamp that Nettie had been talking to earlier. "Ha!" snorted Nettie. "That machine's about as helpful as a strapless ball gown under G-force." But Dan had already run over to it, and was now preparing to humiliate himself on an heroic scale.
"Look," he began, "we have been misassigned our accommodation. This, as I expect you recognise, is Gloria Stanley, the actress."
Dan pointed at Nettie, who immediately caught on to his drift, and dutifully treated the deskbot to a sultry look.
I am her manager, and this young lady is her lawyer."
Lucy really did look the part in her pinstripe power suit.
"We should have been given first-class tickets, but our travel agent screwed up the booking. Can you reassign us immediately?"
The deskbot raised its shade or head and stared with its two lamps straight at Dan. He squirmed, but held his composure.
"And which travel agency would that be?" asked the deskbot.
"Top 10 travel."
Dan was well into his role by now. The deskbot blinked a few times, as if running through a file somewhere in its database. There was a sort of bing noise, and it drummed its fingers on the desk.
"I have no record of such an agency in the galaxy."
"I can assure you it does exist," said Dan, whilst thinking, "Well, it did exist up to this morning."
"Look, we must get an upgrade to first."
Lucy decided to chime in.
"Oh, yes, madam."
The deskbot had become insolent polite.
"To whose account would any upgrade be charged?" "Mayhem, Bader and List," said Lucy.
It was the name of her law firm.
"We have no record of such a company," said the deskbot. "Hey, you didn't even check your database," exclaimed Lucy indignantly.
The deskbot blinked a couple of times, and there was another bing noise. The deskbot leant forward.
"I can only upgrade you if you pay the difference in advance."
"How much is that?"
Dan felt they were on a slippery slope here.
70 million pistras or 2 pnedes. Currency is not accepted, and you may only pay by Galactic Gold credit card."
Dan decided to change tack.
I don't think you quite appreciate who Gloria Stanley is."
"I don't give a stuff who Gloria Stanley is," said the deskbot, suddenly and rather surprisingly. "I can only upgrade you if you pay in advance with a Galactic Gold card." "Oh, let it go," muttered Nettie, who hated this sort of thing.
"Look," said Lucy in her best lawyer's conciliatory tone,
"there must be some way you could organise an upgrade for us. We're valuable customers."
The deskbot seemed to do a quick check, this time on a small screen set in the desk.
"Supergalactic traveller class, complimentary," it read. "You're on free tickets."
"Exactly. We're valued customers. Celebrities."
Dan had thrown caution to the wind. But the deskbot shook its shade. If it had had a lip, it would have curled.
"I'm sorry, there is absolutely nothing I can do. You simply cannot upgrade from supergalactic traveller class, let alone on a complimentary ticket, to first class. Perhaps if you were second class, I could do something."
"Look," said Nettie to the desk-like, "we don't care what class we travel."
"Oh, I do," said Dan.
"So do I," exclaimed Lucy. All we want to do, Nettie continued, is talk to the captain. Can you put us through to him? I have no means of contacting the captain, replied the deskbot. And in any case, it is against company policy to allow supergalactic class travellers, especially complimentary ones, access to any of the senior officers. God, muttered Nettie to the other two, I can't stand this sort of thing. There must be some way of getting through to the captain.
Look, how can we get reassigned to second class?
Lucy could see that Dan was now well and truly in the grip of one of those powerful forces known to man, the desire for a free upgrade. She knew that nothing could stop him.
That surely can't be too much to ask.
Dan was halfway between whining and cajoling. The deskbot started to look earnestly at the ceiling. That's a pretty shade you're wearing. Lucy had decided to try another approach. It's just the company colours, said the deskbot. Oh, but it suits you, said Lucy. Dan rolled his eyes.
Look.
He tried to reassert control in the discussion, but the deskbot interrupted. You have free upgrade vouchers in your rooms. Now, please, I have better things to do.
Vouchers!
Dan was grunting this as they raced back through the loggia at the top of the central well.
Isn't that the travel industry all over? Why do they never tell you these things in the first place?
The lift bot was in a cheerier mood, but only just.
Down! That's what Chalky White yelled at me outside that foxhole at Ypres. It was the last thing he ever did say. Buzz bomb took him out. Same bombers took out my arm and leg. Dan! I can hear his voice to this day.
By the time the elevator had reached the supergalactic travel class deck, the three had heard a full account of the rudimentary medical facilities available at the Khan dressing station, the technical details of cleaning out gangrene from a deep wound, and a near-complete itemization of their Allied forces' requisitioning techniques in Cyprus. For a robot from a civilization which knew nothing of Earth, it was a very impressive performance.
God, I just hope we don't have to use that elevator many more times, groaned Dan.
The three raced off down the supergalactic traveller-class corridor. They were about halfway down when they suddenly realized there was a major problem. Primula Dahlia Chrysanthemum. Nettie was reading the names with her translator specs. Why couldn't they have given the rooms numbers? We don't even know what ours were called, moaned Lucy. Ah, cabbage, exclaimed Nettie. This is mine. She gained entry with her pet, personal electronic thingy, and found her upgrade voucher on the last page of her copy of the Supergalactic Traveller magazine, just after the duty-free shopping article. Look, she said to the other two, while you're trying to find your rooms, I'll go and get my upgrade. I've had an idea. She hurried back to the embarkation lobby, trying to ignore the liftbot's account of life on an army pension and no disablement grant, and while the deskbot reluctantly stamped her ticket with her upgrade to second class, she inquired, I suppose the engine room is aft, is it? At the end of the Grand Axial Canal second class, through which you are now entitled to pass. Here is another voucher entitling you to a free glass of moonswill at the bar. The deskbot handed Nettie another ticket and switched itself off. Nettie went as fast as she could, her high heels echoing around the loggia, towards the entrance to the second-class area. Meanwhile, Lucy and Dan were trailing miserably round the supergalactic traveller-class corridors, looking for any recognisable signs of their cabins. But since every single door and every single inch of corridor were identical to every other door and every other inch of corridor, it seemed a doomed enterprise from the start. They pointed their personal electronic thingies at each door in the vain hope that one would work.
What was Nettie's plan? Dan had decided to take their minds off the present hopeless task. She said something about the engine room.
Hey, what's she going to do, ask the engineer to back up? Grunted Lucy.
Well, maybe she knows about engines, said Dan.
Nettie, oh, sure, hey. There was a click, I swear. Lucy tried one of the doors, but it was resolutely shut against them.
Well, you know, for one of Nigel's bimbos, that net is pretty bright.
Oh, I didn't realise you were interested in her mind, replied Lucy.
Dan was taken by surprise. What's that supposed to mean?
It's opening, exclaimed Lucy, as one door seemed to give for a moment. Oh, no, it isn't.
She's a nice girl, said Dan.
Well, you ought to know. You've been ogling her ever since we all had dinner together. God, when was that? It seems like a lifetime ago.
I wasn't ogling her.
Dan's injured innocence count was incredibly high some days.
Lucy was now working off her frustration.
Anyway, if Ned is so bright, how come she allows Nigel to treat her like a Barbie doll?
Oh, does she?
That sort of woman makes me sick. Why doesn't she stand up for herself?
Well, she still might be quite bright.
Dan ventured this without much hope. Lucy's powers of certitude always had a crushing effect on him.
There is no correlation between size of brain and size of breasts, returned Lucy acidly.
Got it!
Dan had just pointed his pet at a door, and it had, wonderfully and graciously, swung open for them.
Translator specs!
Lucy rapped out her order to the lampstand, and found the Supergalactic Traveller magazine stuck in a rack alongside a leaflet about aerobics classes, a list of self-operated washing machine facilities on the SGT decks, a 132-page form to register your satisfaction about service on board the starship, and a small leaflet entitled What to Do in the Event of Fire. Evidently, the recommended action was to stay extremely calm and remain cool at all times. You were advised to stay in your cabins and not to try and contact any of the staff. And once again, you were admonished to remain relaxed and enjoy the remainder of the flight.
Do you think it's getting colder? Asked Lucy as she tore out the voucher from the magazine.
Anyway, said Dan, I was not ogling Nettie.
Nettie shivered as she waited for the door to the second-class area to open. For a brief moment, she wished her Gap T-shirt covered her midriff. But then, as the door opened and she stepped through, her mind was swamped by the sight before her. She found herself standing on the main jetty of the Grand Axial Canal Second Class. It stretched out in front of her under a simulated sky. Wide columns marked out the elegantly curved walls, and burning braziers dotted the canal embankments. All over the canal, automated gondolas plied lazily back and forth, their robot gondoliers singing pleasantly. A song that brought harmony and peace to the main thoroughfare of the starship Titanic.
She gave him love, she swung above, she kissed him on his smiling handsome lip. The gondolier sang in her ear, she gave him six panades as a tip.
Nettie climbed into the nearest gondola, and the singing stopped. Take me to the engine room, she said.
See, a workplace chum of victorious athletics coach, said the gondolier.
And off they drifted down the Grand Axial Canal.
"Tell me," said Nettie, "shouldn't you be singing when you've got a passenger rather than the other way round?" "See, perspicacious lady orthodontist," replied the robot, breathing evenly with exertion of propelling the craft. "There must be something wrong with the ship's central intelligence system."
Nettie nodded and made a mental note of this. The gondola took us straight down the very middle of the Grand Axial Canal. The pace was relaxed, and the whole ambience so far away from what she ever imagined being on a spaceship to be like, let alone an alien spaceship, that Nettie found herself leaning back against the cushions and letting her mind drift. She wondered why she didn't feel more distressed by her situation. It was almost as if she felt there was some benign presence in the starship, something or someone that she knew would take care of them. Nettie shook her head. The thoughts were all a little too shapeless to make sense. And then what about Nigel? Why didn't she miss him more? For 3 months now, her whole life had revolved around him. She'd made sure his diary was up to date, and that he'd looked at it. She'd made him change his socks every day, and had washed his underpants by hand. She must love him a lot. And yet, she knew he'd just gone out of her life. Not just because they'd been kidnapped by an alien starship full of robots, heavens above. She knew they'd return to Earth. She knew they wouldn't be harmed. But Nigel would not be there for her. Something was broken. And yet she didn't seem to regret it. But she could not, for the life of her, think why. The gondola bumped. They had reached the jetty.
The gondolier was on his knees. She blew a kiss from her trapeze,
sang the robot gondolier as soon as Nettie was out of the gondola.
Thanks, said Nettie. And that was when the lady lost her grip,
sang the robot. Nettie adjusted her translator specs and immediately saw a notice which read, Crew and personnel only. She followed the sign down a stainless steel corridor towards a set of glowing blue doors. As she approached, there was no perceptible engine noise, unless it was that distant rustling of leaves. Or was it the beating of a sea upon a distant shore? Nettie felt a thrill pulse through her.
and then realised it was just a chill. It really was getting very cold in the ship. And was it her imagination, or was her breathing getting more difficult? At the luminous blue doors, Nettie waved her John Lewis credit card and said in a commanding voice that she had never, ever used before, "Special Customs and Excise search warrant. Open up." There was a slight hesitation. The glowing blue doors opened a crack and then shut again, hesitated, and then obediently opened up. The engine room was so similar to the sort of thing you'd see in a science fiction film that Nettie felt she knew exactly where she was. Except, what was that black, black darkness behind the thick window? There didn't seem to be anything there, and yet all the wiring and so forth seemed to be connected to it. Nettie looked around for the intercom. Her idea had been quite a simple one. If they couldn't get up to the bridge to speak to the captain personally, then she'd telephone him from the engine room. There had to be some sort of communication between the bridge and the engineers. In the corner there was a small cabinet. Maybe that was it. She opened the doors to reveal two buttons. One read, "Bomb Monitor," and the other, "Press to Arm." A sudden wave of cold, even colder than the current temperature of the ship, swept through Nettie's body. Bomb? Was there a bomb on board? Nettie pressed the button that read Bomb Monitor. A polite voice said, "Thank you for inquiring about the status of the Mega Scuttler Company's 8D96 full-force Mega Scuttler, a bomb to be proud of, which has been installed for your convenience upon this starship. It is my pleasure to inform you that the Mega Scuttler is currently not activated. Thank you for showing an interest in bombs." Whew, bit of a relief, thought Nettie. Now, where's the intercom? What happened next is totally unclear. Certainly Nettie herself had no recollection. She remembered climbing up the ladder next to the armour-plated window. She could recall feeling colder than ever, and finding it harder to breathe, and then feeling a force gripping her. A force pulling her sideways off the ladder. A force so vast that she thought she was being sucked into a black hole or something. As she felt herself falling horizontally off the ladder towards whatever it was behind the Perspex window. The next thing she knew, she was whirling round in blackness, fighting for her life. Dan and Lucy were having trouble. They had both procured their vouchers and had successfully wheedled an upgrade to second class out of the desk bot. But the trickier negotiation for an upgrade to first class was proving to be a remarkably harrowing experience. They had had to call on every last reserve of self-esteem and self-worth to withstand the deskbot's withering insolence. "You have no credit card. You are not members of the 60 Million Club. You are not even registered frequent travellers. This whole discussion is pointless. You will find the second-class facilities on board this starship more than adequate for your requirements." How could even a robot be so unbelievably, unremittingly snotty, wondered Dan. "Dan," said Lucy, "we're wasting our breath. In fact, is it my imagination, or is it getting harder to breathe?" Dan sniffed the air. Lucy was right. It was also getting colder. "Jesus," he muttered. "The air and heating are at normal levels," announced the doorbot. "That's bullshit," snapped Lucy. "It's getting colder, and it's getting more difficult to breathe." "I can assure you that the air supply and the temperature are set to maximum for supergalactic traveller class comfort," said the doorbot.
"Are you trying to tell us there are different levels of air supply for the different classes of traveller?" exclaimed Dan.
"Not normally, sir, no," replied the doorbot. "However, should the ship be travelling without first or second class passengers, the oxygen and heating will, naturally, be lowered to the comfort requirements of supergalactic traveller class passengers."
"Jesus!" exclaimed Lucy. "You guys are the most cynical, amoral travel company I have ever come across."
"I'm going straight to the Travel Association when I get home."
Dan was not messing about any longer. He was beginning to sweat with panic, despite the cold.
"There isn't enough air to breathe."
"There is ample air and heat for the supergalactic traveller deck, sir, but unfortunately it is getting dispersed over the whole ship."
Lucy, meanwhile, was back at the deskbot, hammering on the desk.
"I am sorry, madam," the deskbot was saying, "but it is company policy to supply first and second class air and heat only if there are first and second class passengers on board."
"But we're second class passengers."
"I have no record of any second class passengers on board."
"But you just gave us an upgrade. We have vouchers."
Oh, I'm afraid vouchers are not processed until the end of the month. Thank you for your inquiry. The desk bot suddenly turned itself off.
All right, all right. Dan was trying to work himself round to decisive mode. Oh, let's get organized. It's vital we all stick together. Go and get Nettie while I try and sort this mess out.
Hey, but if I go and get Nettie, we won't all be sticking together.
Lucy's rational streak tended to obtrude whenever Dan was in decisive mode. All right, I'll go and get her.
Now, that's the same thing. Anyway, why are you so worried about Nettie?
I'm not. I just think we all ought to keep together in case one of us needs help.
Like, what sort of help do we give if we're all running out of air and freezing to death?
Lucy was getting quite steamed up, considering the cold. All right, don't go and look for Nettie, but what are we going to do?
Dan sounded so desperate, so forlorn, and yet, oddly, Lucy preferred it to decisive mode.
I'll see if I can find a supply of oxygen. You do your best here. You must be able to get us up to first class.
Hey, but that's still not sticking together, moaned Dan.
I never said we should stick together. That was your idea, said Lucy.
Then she put her arms round Dan and gave him a big kiss on the cheek. She liked Dan best when he seemed vulnerable.
Cheer up, second-class traveller. I'm sure we're going to be all right.
And with that she had gone, and Dan suddenly felt terribly alone. So alone, he felt he could pick his loneliness up in his hands and examine it. But even as he did so, he realized it wasn't Lucy's absence that made him feel empty inside. It was something else.